6 to 6:30 is we'll take time to write about our experience and realizations and so on, particularly during the chanting, but for the weekend. And then tomorrow morning, after Mangal Arati, we'll spend some time sharing and then processing that. Although it would be really nice to do that right now. I'm not so sure about the schedule. Okay, anyway, we spent some time already on the topic of chanting from the heart, from chanting with feeling, chanting with taste. So, taste is advanced, go back a step. Chant with feeling. Spend some time with chant with feeling. Chanting with feeling. And let's say that's in contrast to chanting mechanically or chanting dutifully, chanting because we have to. Chanting with feeling, we want to. In Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami has given 64 items of devotional service, and of those 64 items, through the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he's identified 5 that are most potent, and of those 5, chanting is most important. In part, chanting is most important because it's the Yuga Dharma, so Mahaprabhu made emphasis for the chanting of the holy name, and the followers of Lord Chaitanya follow Lord Chaitanya. We put emphasis on chanting. There's a reason for it. There's a reason why it's Yuga Dharma. It's a reason why in this most difficult age chanting acts to awaken our dormant Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada has described that when a person is asleep, their knowledge acquiring senses are dormant except for one, and that's hearing. So if there's some sound during someone's dream, if they continue to dream, then that sound may be incorporated in their dream because it's hearing. Or why we have alarm clocks, because the process of hearing is still awakened, and when hearing the alarm, then we used to or should wake up to sound. Certainly, if you shake somebody, it's probably going to wake them up too. But the sound vibration, even without touching them, it acts. So similarly, our dormant Krishna consciousness is awakened through sound. Two poetic metaphors are used by Lord Chaitanya, according to Sanatana Goswami, to describe the hearing process. One is the Chakora bird, and the other is the Chakravaka bird. Who knows what the Chatak bird? Chatak bird is a bird that Let's put it out of the way for now. drinks water only from the rain that falls from the dark rain clouds. Otherwise there may be water in other places, but that bird looks to the sky to drink the water that comes from the sky, from the rain clouds. So the poetic imagery is that one is looking for mercy from Shyamasundar, the dark monsoon-like personality, and like the chatak bird is eager to drink the water from the cloud, the devotee is eager to receive the mercy of Krishna. And in that way one can chant the holy name. The idea is, making the comparison, that without water you can't survive. So a devotee also feels, without mercy we can't survive. If Krishna is not merciful, we'll not survive. Of course, Krishna is merciful. But from our side, it means the mood is a dire need. And extending oneself and eager to receive mercy. Exclusive devotion. Water may be from many other sources. I'll take only water from this one source. And the chakra vaka bird. This is from our Vedic lore, whatever that means. The chakra vaka birds sing at night. And when they're singing at night, they're calling the male bird is calling the female bird is calling the male bird to enjoy their relationship. So, the Vedic lore says, one evening when one male and female bird were enjoying atop a tall tree and calling, they became so infatuated with one another, they fell from the tree and fell in the lap of a sadhu. And the sadhu became disgusted and cursed them that they'll never be able to do their mating in the evening again. So they continue the calling, but without the meeting. Chakravaka birds. Sanatana Goswami describes like this. Okay. So, in the same way, a devotee calls Krishna's name, as the Goswamis taught, in this mood of separation, like the lover and beloved. Apart from one another, they're attached to one another and they're calling one another. They're calling for the other to join them. So their happiness can be fulfilled. So those are two ways in which Sanatana Goswami has described, according to Lord Chaitanya's teachings, how one can chant with feeling. Our relationship with Krishna has been forgotten. It's eternal, but the relationship is forgotten. And so, chanting is in the sadhana stage, we just accept. because scripture tells us and our spiritual master tells us, the specific succession members tell us. So on their authority we're accepting this will awaken our lost relationship with God. And that's what you can't ask a child to stop being a child. A child is going to be a child. It won't work. What do you think is going to happen? She's going to want something, she's going to make some noise, and you're going to tell her to be quiet, and she won't be able to be quiet, and you'll have to go. Why don't you try just out on the balcony or something? So then it's not a big commotion. It's a nice balcony. Something that accentuates feeling in relationship with Krishna is when we sense danger. Very natural. It's like the warning that we all hear when we go to Jagannath Puri, that when you don't go deep into the water, because when the tide is going out, the undertow is very strong, it will just pull you out. And invariably there is somebody that doesn't pay attention to that, and the undertow pulls people out. And then even they're good swimmers, they're swimming strongly back toward shore and they're getting pulled out because the undertow moves like that. And what do? If you haven't understood good advice and you go ahead and you're being pulled out. So, the realization of the flow of this material energy is very, very strong. We're in the midst of it. And it's accelerating. And it's all around us. It's very powerful. And society is degrading very, very fast. Fast and faster and faster and faster. If the recognition of the difficult situation that we're in tells us we need to take shelter, and take shelter in a situation like that, in a situation of danger, is with feeling. So perhaps that's something that impels somebody to take up spiritual life, is sense of danger and difficulty. And then after practicing a devotional life for some time, things may seem to be more under control, and then the tendency to again be complacent or relax our submission. So, to develop taste means to go beyond that sense of being drawn away by the forces of the material energy, as much as a sense of hankering for relationship with Krishna. That's something that we've been hearing and discussing. That's what chanting of the holy name with feeling means. It's what chanting of the holy name means. We're asking for service. And service is for our relationship. We're a servant of Krishna's master. And then to experience the nature of that relationship, not just service as in the sense of getting something done, and that our sense of accomplishment that we did it, but the loving exchange with Krishna is what we want. In Jagannath Puri, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, is described that at one point Lord Chaitanya told his servant Govinda, or Chaitanya Bhagavat, he told his servant Govinda that I won't have meals with anyone unless they're Lakeshwara. And so the word was spread, Mahaprabhu won't take meals anymore unless someone is Lakeshwara. So they thought it meant that you have one lakh of rupees. And who has one lakh of rupees in Puri? Very few people. So they were wondering, why is Mahaprabhu insisting that we have wealth and he won't have any meal with us unless we have one lakh of rupees or whatever the currency unit was. And he explained, no, my intention was only one who is chanting 64 rounds a day. Only then will I take my meal at that person's home. So we're here with the 32 rounders while the 64 rounders are making themselves eligible to invite Mahaprabhu. And there's something about chanting 64 rounds that's very special for those who have done that. What to speak of doing it every day. That was what Mahaprabhu was saying. Not that once they chanted 64 rounds, okay, now we'll have lunch. But every day, this was Mahaprabhu's standard. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is quoted, I don't know, I've heard it so many times, I haven't seen it written anywhere, but that one who is not chanting 64 rounds, they're not yet human. Still animal. There's a quote like that from Srila Prabhupada. Here's a dialogue. It's Mukunda Maharaj describing some interaction he had with Srila Prabhupada way, way back in 1967. Srila Prabhupada and Mukunda Maharaj were together in a room in San Francisco, and Prabhupada asked him, what is your definition of Krishna? So Mukunda Maharaj replied, Krishna is God. And our duty is to worship him and serve him. Prabhupada's response, you must chant 64 rounds every day. There's the service. Mukunda Maharaj explains, when I heard that, I was shocked. He didn't know what to say, so he remained silent. He just kept looking at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada looked back and nodded and said, at least 32 rounds. Mukunda Maharaj remained silent. And Prabhupada said, at the very least, you must chant 16 rounds a day. That's our standard. It's a compromised standard, or a standard that Prabhupada said, minimum. at japa retreats it's invariable to make reference to this discussion between Prabhupada and Brahmananda in Nairobi, where someone in a morning walk conversation was asking Prabhupada, how do we know when we're chanting in a quality way? And Prabhupada's answer was, you must. 16 rounds minimum, it's a must. And then they asked again, and Brahmananda tried to interpret and said, Prabhupada, it's not, he understands he has to chant his prescribed rounds, he's made a vow, he must chant. But how does one know when one's chanting quality? And then Prabhupada went into a long explanation of when there's chanting quality, there's no question. You like the example of the person who is full. There's no question. Someone has to tell you, now you're full. You can tell them, now I'm full. I don't need anything more. So, quality, Prabhupada explained, that's why you must, because you're not at quality. So when there's quality, why 16 rounds? 16,000 rounds is not enough. Went on describing like that. There's taste. And when there's taste, it's not like there's a point of satiation. Now I've had enough. One wants to chant more and more. There's the wonderful verse from Padyavali. No, excuse me, the Dugdha Madhava by Rupa Goswami. From the introductory verses of the Dugdha Madhava. We know this from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya asked Rupa Goswami to recite some of the verses before himself and Sukh Damodar and Ramananda Roy and the other associates of Lord Chaitanya. So he wanted to hear the opening line, the invocation verse. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. Then we desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted this verse, Haridas Thakur, upon hearing the vibration, became jubilant and began to dance while praising its meaning. One has to learn about the beauty and transcendental position of the holy name of the Lord by hearing the revealed scriptures from the mouths of the devotees. Nowhere else can we hear of the sweetness of the Lord's holy name. So for developing taste, it's kind of obvious from the statement here and from our experience, but associating with those who have taste helps one get taste, or at least have some inkling of what that is. Taste is a very advanced position in devotional service. There's so many, because the holy name is our main theology, there's so many nice topics to discuss about it. One comes from statements or prayers made by Vritrasura in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. The situation with Vritrasura and Indra is, as you know, Vritrasura was King Chitraketu, cursed to become a demon, so he became a demon, as the enemy of Indra. The intention was that he would become the enemy who would kill Indra, but because the Karmakanda mantra was pronounced one syllable wrong, he became the enemy who would be killed by Indra instead of the enemy who would kill Indra. And so his mission was to be killed by Indra as a service to the Lord, and so he was very enthusiastic to be killed by Indra. But he was acting as the enemy, so he was fighting very intensely. But he wanted to be killed by Indra, and when Indra became disheartened at how strongly Vritrasura was fighting, he gave courage to Indra. The Lord personally arranged for you to have this thunderbolt for one reason: to kill me. Mm-hmm. It's invincible. You can't be stopped. And right here, there's a nice neck. You can just use your thunderbolt right here. Go ahead. Take courage. This is the Lord's desire. And I'm part of that desire, that I be killed by you. So please, continue. And as he spoke about the Lord, he started speaking more about the Lord. And he's saying, we both have the same master. You have material interest, I don't have material interest. You want your kingdom back. All that's standing in the way is me, so get rid of me and you got your kingdom back. And I don't want any kingdom. I want to be with the Lord. So we both get what we want. Go ahead. What are you waiting for? Then he was describing that same Lord that both of us are serving. He prays, "Our Lord," meaning yours and mine, we both have the same Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotee to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Although many people are pursuing those as their goal. Our Lord forbids us from that. Such mentality is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees and not by persons who aspire for material gains. Then he turns his attention to the Lord. He's like ecstatic. Oh my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant, so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engaged in the loving service of your Lordship. Now he is in that position, confirmed later by Maharaj Pariksit to Shukadeva Goswami. He says, how did somebody of such a demoniac nature and birth become Uttama Adhikari Bhakta? And the answer is, it's only possible to do that through the agency of an Uttama Adhikari Bhakta. He had the association of Narada. And because he had the association of Narada, he became like Narada. So now he's in the body of Vritrasura, not saying Narada by name, but he wants Narada's association, or such devotees, Narada-like devotees. Because in the association of Narada-like devotees, this Vritrasura stuff would stop. And the pure devotional life would be manifest. But he's on that platform. Even when he's fighting with Indra, it's in pure devotion, in service to Lord Vishnu, who wants this. And so he's doing in that spirit. Because he's doing in that spirit, he's not only powerful, he's invincible. Except for the very means that the Lord gives for destroying him. Then he says, O lotus-eyed Lord, he gives three metaphors, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them. So this is a mood of how one can chant. Picture in your mind little baby birds in a nest. Their arms are moving, but they can't fly because their feathers haven't developed. But here comes mother with some nice worm or something. And she, from her beak, puts in their beak. And they're fully dependent until their feathers grow, and then they can go themselves. Or, as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking. So the commentary describes when the mother cow comes at the time of milking, the calf stretches his neck out, or her neck out, to take the milk from the mother and under the body of the mother, and very enthusiastically trying to capture their only means of sustenance, just like the Chataka bird. There's space down here. Or, as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. So that's the third image, the image of a lover separated from her beloved, and they're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for some message, some direct opportunity at least to hear from the person, and again to be with the person and be happy in that relationship with that person, serving that person. So like that, Dhritarashtra is describing. That's how he's feeling. But these are nice instructions about awakening, feeling, and chanting prayers. We're going to discuss this more tomorrow. Standard prayers or our own prayers, both. It's from the heart. When it's offered from the heart, then it awakens transcendental feelings. If the mundane example is just a reflection of the transcendental. The mundane example is like a family that has some family member or friend or somebody in Iraq. And then they hear there's some explosions and they're very anxious to find out, is this our friend or relative or something like that? Because I know some people that have somebody, a relative in Iraq.
a family member. And then the family member is also missing their family. So they get a letter from the family and, you know, the whole thing. But it's all temporary. But on the transcendental platform, but like that, on the transcendental platform, when Krishna goes, we know from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the attachment that the residents of Nanda Maharaj's palace and Mother Yasoda and all the queens, or elder gopis, when Krishna is going to the forest, they can't bear Krishna's separation. Those very beautifully described scenes where Mother Yasoda time and time again runs after Krishna to fix his belt or put something more in his lunch or adjust his clothes or instruct Balaram, stay by his side. Don't let him out of your sight. Make sure he's safe. The maternal affection of Mother Yasoda is just uncontrollable. And each time Krishna says, I'll be all right. I must go now, and takes a few more steps, and Mother Yasoda runs again. So when Mother Yasoda hears that Krishna is in the grips of the Kaliya serpent, she wants to run to be with Krishna. And when she sees he gets there and nothing can be done, she wants to jump in the poisonous Kaliya lake. She has to be forcibly restrained. Better to give up my life than Krishna lose his life. What's my life meaning? Let me try to rescue him. Those are transcendental feelings. So, like the mundane feelings, the little bird in the bird's nest, looking, waiting for the mother to come, helpless. The small calf waiting for the mother to come at the end of the day for milking. The lover and beloved separated. So we're not there, but the prayers of those who are there, or as Prabhupada described about the Brahma Samhita verses, as a regular daily function, try to enter into the spirit of this hymn. So prayers can help awaken deeper feelings. When we're trying to increase our chanting, both numerical and quality, it really takes a sustained effort, just like we heard Sanatana Goswami describe. A sustained effort over time. And especially when increasing chanting, it becomes even more obvious. Because at least for most of us at this stage, we're accustomed to 16 rounds, and so that's part of our life. And for many of us, it's been part of our life for years and years and years. And I often think, how do people who don't chant 16 rounds do it? How do they go through life every day and all the twists and turns and convolutions and problems? How do they do it? It's unthinkable to not. But then increasing, then some further challenge comes. And chanting, at least reaching into the recesses of the heart for deeper purpose and deeper meaning and in the empowerment that comes, the purification that comes from further chanting. It's a nice experience. My thoughts are already going to the activity tomorrow of the devotee sharing with Mother Mother. I'm sure it's going to be very nice. So some additional thoughts here on chanting with taste. See if there's... Spend some time just discussing this topic or questions and answers kinds of things, sharing with one another on our time spent chanting together. I think we'll just have kirtan. Any questions or topics you want to bring up? Yeah.
What's about the Maharaj when you try to put some feelings in your chant, in chanting, but you're afraid to do so? There's some fear that push you back. Well, it's better not put so many feelings into it. It's just better to be in a safer place.
That's something that you experience.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there another voice that says, but that's what you really want?
Yeah, but the other voice is telling me,
louder?
Don't get too much involved. You don't know what you get into it.
Yadavar?
It makes me think of Prabhupada's purport in Bhagavad Gita, where he talks about the fear of a personal spiritual identity. Well, maybe that's coming from. Can you expound on that, Marla? That idea of your understanding of what that is? Fear of a personal spiritual identity?
What Prabhupada explains is what I understand, and that is our experience has been what we get involved in a personal level with another person, there's pain.
Mm.
And, you know, we like pleasure, we don't like pain, and so to hear the conception that says in the spiritual plane there's person, I don't want that pain. So we anesthetize the pain by keeping away from the concept of a person. And a relationship where there's the risk.
So could that be the basis of, or, you know, one of the
impersonal
aspects of the impersonal?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of
personhood.
Pain. The hurt that comes with having a relationship.
Mm. You know, it's amazing because in the material world, that relationship may be perfect all the way to the end, but at the end, say there's death, of course there always is, and then there's pain. So that even the relationship is ideal, still there's sometimes extreme pain. Mm. You can't get around it.
Choose your pain. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the description is given when Narada is describing Krishna being taken from Vrindavan by Akrura. It says normally Vaishnavas don't describe this because it's the anguish of pain of the Vrijvasis is so intense that ordinary people, when they hear it, they think, oh, forget it, I'm not going to have anything to do with it. This stuff, this is too painful. Thinking pain like they're feeling pain. But in a transcendental relationship, it's an heightened manifestation of ecstasy. Which by mundane conception doesn't compute. It's pain. It hurts. They don't want Krishna to go, and Krishna goes. That's pain. We've given everything to you and now you're leaving us? You called us in the dead of night and now you're telling us to go home? Stop this. So it looked like pain. We don't want pain. So don't go too far into the feeling side because you're putting yourself at risk. That's the material calculation. Yet at the same time, what we really want is a loving relationship. Without exception, everyone wants a loving relationship. They want to love and be loved. And then so, what do? Hang out in Twilight Zone or something, where you're not this or not that. That's painful. Something? No. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's always some satisfaction in chanting Hare Krishna. It's just the preliminary first dawn of the holy name. We wouldn't be chanting if there's not something there. If there's some satisfaction, some minimal pleasure. You know, kirtan is very pleasurable. Even japa can become very pleasurable. But it's not constant, you know, of course. It's flickering for me.
But
there be a fear of feeling if it's pleasurable? Is there any bad?
Well, it's like for the devotees that are here from India, mm-hmm. they've heard it, or at least they know their friends, some friends that have heard it, mm-hmm. where parents back home say, "It's nice to be religious, but don't be fanatical. Mm-hmm. Like, don't be too religious, because that's fanatical." You're fanatical, and then you'll stop your worldly duties, and you know you become a sannyasi. You become a fanatical person, and the way that you're going, you're becoming fanatical. So you know, go to the temple when you have exams, and you know something like that. That's good. That's okay. But you know, rising early in the morning and doing all this. That's fanatical. So from their perspective, and they have a fear. They'll lose their son or daughter.
They haven't experienced it for themselves.
Huh?
They haven't experienced for themselves. They're only into Dharma. They're not into Bhakti, with the deep pleasure.
Even my siblings, mm-hmm. you know, like my sister that I grew up with, that mm-hmm. we just did everything together when we grew up. As far as she's concerned, she's lost a brother.
Mm. It's hard for them to relate. What motivates?
Well, it's hard for me to relate to all of what she's into.
Yeah.
You know, the way that we used to relate was not of no interest. Mm. So she didn't lose a brother. She gained a sadhaka brother. But it's not. Mm. So the fear is also loss of, if I take full shelter in this, that there's that part of the hesitation is not just fear of pain in a personal relationship, it's what if, you know, it's not real. So then I'll be nowhere. And now I have, at least I have something. I let go of something. And there's nothing. We don't have nothing. So let me hold on to something. It's attachment. Mm-hmm. And a spiritual level. failing to be attached to Krishna. Is this because the battery is low, or?
I remember when I first came upon the Association of Devotees, it was such a huge relief in my life, because I knew, from them I was able to find out there is an absolute truth. There is a final destination and a sure absolute goal, you know. This is the ultimate goal, you know. It's pretty high, it's pretty amazing, but it's reachable, at least. There's something that you can put our life towards. That was a good thing. But then also, it also gave me a chance to get rid of all my material anxieties. And that's still where I'm at. In other words, I'm still a devotee only because I'm afraid of material life. It's just, you know, such a bummer that I just don't want to slide back into the anxiety and the frustrations that material life can give you. So I don't know how I can get off that platform. That's my question. You know, I have a purer motive to get closer to Krishna. Not just, you know, get rid of all my anxieties. That's not a sort of a lower platform, right?
I think I can respond to your question with the way that you responded to his, which is, there must be something, otherwise you couldn't continue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just invest consciousness there, and that which gives you some taste, a sense of higher purpose, at least following that value, that's stronger than, you know, aversion to the pain of material life. Borrowing from Vaisheshika's phrase, where attention goes, energy flows.
Okay.
So, nasate vidite bhavo na bhavo vidite sataha. The tattvadarshis give attention to that which is sat. The other is asat. There's some, you know, fear of asat. It's a bad deal. So invest consciousness in sat. And particularly that which derives real happiness. Now part of why we are here, I'll assume that there's something of a mix of some persons actually have some taste for the holy name, and others just have some faith that if I can develop a little taste in the holy name, I'll become a better devotee. And with all of what that means. There's some faith. So coming together like this is to nurture that purpose. So here you are.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are. Yes.
One comment I had regarding the fear part is sometimes there's a glimpse of that Krishna is the person kind of feeling. When that comes, in my experience, fear comes because there's an increased responsibility to maintain that relationship and that's you are more aware of this, so you can't like escape just being mechanical and getting things done. So it increases that responsibility. Sometimes fear comes due to that aspect of being more given more and being more
fear in the sense that I won't be able to sustain this.
Yeah. So it makes you more accountable, and so you don't want to operate on that. You might afraid it too early for you to operate on that level. So it's better to just get at a lower level. So it's good.
Wow.
That's something I've experienced like
that. Anybody else have an experience like that one?
I generally feel that I'm being pushed into it at times. That for some stuff I'm not ready, or as Govindchandra Prabhu is saying, that you know, it's intimidating. That you know, you'll get more into it, and I kind of start to wonder what happens. But at the same time, out of a duty bound, or you know, there is no other thing we know than just this, so we keep doing it. So
that's a little different. He's describing an actual. Have you shared this with others and found some resonance?
That verse Prabhupada quoted, that was what I was thinking, the fear of spiritual identity. I was thinking of that as a, because once you are aware of that, it's so much more accountability and being responsible at that level comes with it. It's not free.
It's not free?
Yeah, it's not.
That you lose freedom?
No, like the experience that Krishna gives you is not free. It comes with that responsibility of saying that and being aware of that and acting on that platform on a continuous basis. Not, you can't just have it like as a free gift, like that you use it like you want. You have to be accountable to a higher degree now.
Pajavali?
When I read that in the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita, that the difficulty is, as he's saying, being a person takes responsibility. So the impersonalists have no responsibility. They just blame it on the force and keep going. So the relationship is a very intimate internal activity. And we're not very good at it. Because we're in a very impersonal world.
Does that touch on it? It's not, sounds a little different.
The term is responsibility for the person.
Well, you're using the word accountability. She's using the word responsibility. You're responsible. When you have a relationship with someone, you're responsible to them.
Yeah. I mean, like, next time you don't chant nicely, gives you a greater sense of guilt because you know that's the.
Well, I would think just carrying the dialogue. I'm thinking, you know, want to see if others want to participate in this, but. I would think it's like an invitation. Krishna is inviting you into a very confidential space. And that's exciting. That's like what we're waiting for. And so why would the answer be no? You're saying the answer is no because I'll be more accountable. But having had that experience, the next time you're chanting, as you said, or doing service at a less accountable position, you know that you just copped out. And there's a greater sense of guilt than acting accountably, because Krishna invited you in. Now, one of the concerns might be offense. Yadubar and Vishaka probably can share some of their experience with this phenomenon. I remember about being in Prabhupada's association and the risk of making an offense. Mm-hmm. And you had to do, you know, very, with your camera work, you know, like capture Prabhupada in intimate moments and feel this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and why, you know, somebody might take it as offense. You're there with the camera and Prabhupada's, you know.
This happened more in Vishaka's case than mine.
Yeah? Could you, so.
Being a lady.
Uh huh.
She has a few stories.
I said she has more than a few.
In DVD 7, she relates one. San Francisco Rath Yatra. Have you seen that?
San Francisco Rath Yatra, number 7? No. I saw the early one. But I had a conversation, I was at the Brooklyn Temple in 1970 or something like that. 72, something like that. And without mentioning names, one of Prabhupada's personal servants was removed from that service. And so there was consideration of who would be Prabhupada's personal servant, and Kirti Raj was being considered as a candidate, and he was saying, no way. Because, and you know, why? I asked him why. He said, because I've seen everyone that gets in that position, they're gone in a short time. Because of that intimacy, then familiarity, and then contempt, and then they're fallen, they're gone. I said, oh, I'm not doing it. I'll do some service remote, but I'm not going to get in close like that. Then he turned to me and said, you want to do it?
No way.
I couldn't even process it. I was thinking, I'm just a pipsqueak. What can I, you know? I'm nobody. I can't be Prabhupada's servant. I think it was even something I considered seriously. Although, at least 500 times after that, I thought I blew it. If I had said yes and had been, you know, put through the mill, and maybe, but I said no, I'm nobody.
What's the right?
I didn't make any offense. I didn't get close, but it's a little bit like the invitation. The hesitation wasn't, I might be more accountable. I just, you know, I'm not the right person. I have no qualification. Forget it. It's not even. Another next topic, please. But so, from your experience, can you share a little bit with being with Prabhupada, and specifically that knowing that there was at risk to be in a confidential service position? Maybe it's different than this being in a woman's body stories.
Yeah, I think it's a little different. I mean, I can tell a story, but I don't know if it'll be so relevant to the discussion.
Go ahead. Everybody likes Prabhupada stories. You've got many.
Well, a different time from San Francisco, I was instructed by Rameshwar Swami that he wanted pictures of Prabhupada with his eyes open. He didn't feel it was suitable for the books to have Prabhupada with his eyes closed. So Prabhupada was seeing Jayavada Madhava on the Vyasa sign in Los Angeles, New York, and his eyes were tight shut in minutes, practically. I was just sitting right in front of him down the steps, waiting. I wasn't doing anything with this. But, you know, my instruction is the eyes have to be open, his eyes are closed, what to do. And then on my backside, I felt this sharp hit. Mm. And I looked around, and there was a swami, not mentioning any names, who had used his danda to indicate to me I should go because I was just sitting there not doing anything. So I looked at Prabhupada, and at that moment, he had opened his eyes and he had seen that little
exchange.
So he looked at this sannyasi with a very severe look, like a piercing thunderbolt type look. Is that relevant?
Where's that picture?
Well, I didn't take a picture at that moment with that expression.
Pictures in your mind.
In the memories book, Mahatma is coming up to this point. He was doing book distribution. He was longing to be a personal servant of Srila Prabhupada. But then he saw that they were wrong, falling down after serving. And then he was very glad that he didn't go for that service. He expresses that. He says, I'm here booking and following the order of Srila Prabhupada. And I'm happy doing it now. I don't long for this other. So he was happy the way he was. He had the opportunity also. He didn't take it.
There's yeah. one reflection on that, that there probably did have some servants who didn't fall down.
Yes, that's correct.
Shri Kirti.
Yeah.
And Harisarian. They both had in common, perhaps, that they had a very nice, friendly relationship with all their godmothers and their sisters. They didn't feel a lording over or try to control or I'm better than you.
Yeah, they maintained a humble mood.
Very humble mood. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The thing is that, you know, not to discredit them at all, but you know they've maintained their faith and drop over the years in a wonderful way. But there was difficulty, you know, after they left Prabhupada service and with you know most there is you say that most disciples did have the ups and downs, but there was some difficulty.
So maybe there's
but it's to their wonderful credit that they have that they're where they are today.
So
wonderful faith and
so just before we move on to the next comment, a way to move forward with those moments where a sense of Krishna's personality and his reciprocating in a personal way, maintain a humble mood and simply serve, you'll get much benefit, lessons and deeper spiritual feelings. One of the things that in discussions that I've been in on this topic, this just using the Sachinandan Swami phrase, sacred space, when you're chanting where everything is it's amazing. The concentration and just what makes that dissipate is you know, our material conditioning of material attraction. Something comes into the mind that's the mind goes to instead. And then it's covering time again. But not, oh, I don't want this. Because I'm more accountable to Krishna now. So if that comes, maybe this humble mood, Krishna is just being kind and encouraging. And stay in the position of taking Krishna's kindness, but stay very humble. And he wants some service. What is the service? Protect. Jiva Goswami describes this in Bhakti Sandarbha. Very nice example. Humility, serving in a humble mood for a devotee is like an eyelid protecting the eye. Here comes an object, and even involuntarily, the eyelid blinks to protect the eye. So similarly, Jiva Goswami describes this quality of humility in a devotee offers them protection. Protection from pride, protection from offense, because their mood is, they're always being attentive to, in a humble mood, what's pleasing.
One thing I wanted to reflect the thought and see if it's right or wrong. You know, I haven't seen that in Indian people generally, but what little TV I used to watch before many years ago, there used to be shows where they want to get married and just before marriage they get cold-fitted and try to run away and, you know, and then once the marriage happens everything becomes alright. is that what we experience somewhat like with our relationship with Krishna when we try to go near? I'm trying to use that metaphor. Maybe that's something.
Wow. Cold feet want to run away. In Chicago, the Chicago Temple is right across the street from a big Catholic church. And Fudrin Ryan, I've heard him tell this story 10 times. He was GBC before I was GBC, so as a good neighbor gesture, he went to meet the priest so he could, you know, have a nice relationship with the temple and the church. So I went in the church and it was this huge cathedral. I've never been. With a very, very long aisle leading, you know, from the back to the front where the priest stands. And he asked the priest, why was it designed this way? Because, you know, the building takes up literally a whole block. He said, oh, it's so that when we have weddings and they're walking down the aisle before they take their marriage vows, they can always change their mind. Oh, is that why they have it? I don't think it's quite like, you know, we can change our mind with Krishna like a wedding. But it's the covering. In the case of a relationship, you know, somebody worthy. But in the case of Krishna, it's not a question, is Krishna worthy? It's our dirt, our material attachment that keeps us holding back and hesitating.
Gopis aren't afraid.
Huh?
The gopis, they weren't afraid to give the dust. They're not fearful.
Yeah. That's really right.
Anything?
Yeah. Can I ask a question, Maharaj? While trying to chant with feeling, if there is an outpour of sentiments, how do we make sure that our mind doesn't drift from the sound vibration of the holy name at the same time?
If there's a strong feeling that our mind doesn't go from the holy name, it's real easy for the mind to go even when there's no feeling, when there is feeling, or somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. So the only solution or guarantee is purity, where there's only one attachment. And with attachment and genuine spiritual feelings, then the spiritual feelings may come and change, but there's only when there's purity is there any certainty. Because the mind makes associations so quickly from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. And I'm regularly amazed that while chanting, the thought that I end up on, and you know, and trace back, how did that thought come? And that came before that with that thought, and before that with that thought, and it started with something innocent. And next thing you know, it's out of the universe. But something foundational has to be a core part of our activity of chanting, so we go back to that. If the feeling, here's something that may be helpful. The short is, where does that feeling come from? It comes from a relationship with Krishna. There's a spiritual feeling.
in discussions about events like this where inspiration comes and then people ask, commonly ask the question, how do I sustain that inspiration? The inspiration should stay connected to the source of the inspiration. Just like, let's say, somebody gives you some nice advice. You have a discussion with a friend and you share something with them, and they just in the course of the conversation offer some advice and it resonates. Wow, that's really right on. Now, the material conditioned tendency is to want to go and do it. The sustaining force is to not right away go and do it, but to stay connected to the source. Mindful, appreciative, grateful, and then each of the next successive steps is maintaining that connection from that source, that person from whom the inspiration came or the scriptural reference, and you keep that spiritual connection going. And then it doesn't just, because the other thing happens, that is, I'm going to go and do it, and after some period of time, the inspiration faded and it's gone. And then what happened? And that's impersonalism, or the absence of the person from whom the inspiration has come. The one scriptural place where part of my grounding is Srimad Bhagavatam, a big part of my grounding is Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a place where Maharaj Parikshit, second canto, is asking Shukadeva Goswami about something that he already knows, because he's Maharaj Parikshit. He's the son of the royal family. He was trained from childhood and all scriptural knowledge. He's the grandson of the Pandavas. He's a pure devotee. He knows things. So he's asking questions about creation, which he already knows. So he's not asking for information. He's asking for the realization that Shukadeva Goswami has about it. How does it work? Not technology, but spiritual connection, spiritual realization. When Shukadeva Goswami answers, he offers prayers. He doesn't forget the question, but he answers the question in the form of prayers first to his father Vyasadeva and to the scriptures, and in the course of offering prayers and offering, he's staying connected, he's staying, you could say, spiritually grounded, and he's praying that his questions, that his response will be so empowered that Maharaj Parikshit will have a sense of the answer. He's acting just as an instrument and staying connected. So, back to your question, with some emotions, some feelings, spiritual feelings come in the course of chanting, connect immediately, don't lose the connection, don't get lost in the feeling that, oh wow, this is a nice feeling. The source, the name and all those wonderful personalities who have brought you to that position, but the gratitude in the heart, just connecting with those persons and those instructions and the name itself. And then the flow may go wherever the flow may go, and it's not going to disconnect you from that source. Leaving you with a sense of loss. I just lost something very valuable, this nice feeling.
Anything else? Vishakha?
I need to speak a little about faith. Why some people have it and some don't, and some use it and some nurture it so that it grows.
There has to be a very deep connection between the attraction to the holy name and the development of faith.
Absolutely. That's like a book. That was your question. That's a topic. We're going in the Japa retreat that we're planning for Devanagari. That's going to be one of the themes. The role of faith and nurturing faith, the importance of faith. It covers the topic covers the whole range of devotional service. It says pick a few off the ripened fruits off the tree. One is, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the description of the 9 stages of bhakti, from preliminary faith to prema, is nothing other than describing the maturing of faith, stages of faith. From the seed to the fruit that produces more seeds. It's just stages of nurturing the faith. And so then you can break that down and say there's these 9 stages of faith. Then another statement of faith is something that we already have. In fact, just as Krishna Prema, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunoi, Krishna Prema is already there. So the seed of Krishna Prema is already there. And what makes the seed come out? It's the association of those who have faith. So when we select association, we should be respectful to everyone, but when we select association, we should select those that have faith. And moreover, we should be good association to nurture the faith of others, or be very careful not to damage the faith of others, both by our speech and our action. Because it's very hurtful when somebody, by their speech or action, damages another's faith. Then another one is that transcendental faith goes beyond circumstance. Meaning, it's not that circumstance creates faith, and if the circumstance isn't there, then I become faithless. But it's beyond circumstance. It's meaning that it's some real faith is something that's transcendental. Weak faith is something that's circumstantial. When everything is right, I'm feeling very good. My faith is strong. And things are not going so well, my faith gets tested. And there's calamity, and I'm not sure what's going to happen with my faith. That's in a immature stage, in the stages of evolving of bhakti. And nishtha is the state, so the obstacles for steadiness of faith is our own impurities. It's not the circumstance, it's our own impurities. So, in other words, someone who is firm in faith can be exposed to favorable, unfavorable, and mixed, and their faith remains steady. Because its faith has been in a fixed stage, nishtha, is beyond matter.
not generated by, nor negatively influenced by. Ahoitatiyapratiyata kind of faith. And that comes from hearing. It makes sense to me that careful study of scripture, careful study of scripture takes place, that nurtures faith in the fundamental principle of faith and hearing. And that faith and hearing gets transferred in turn to just the very simple form of the faith in the Holy Name. Because in chanting of the Holy Name, there's nothing fruitive about it. What are you getting done? It's keeping you from getting things done. At least it appears like that. So it's faith in that which is not phenomenal but is fully noumenal or fully spiritual. I'll share something that happened during this morning's chanting. The first part of it I shared with you the first day. And that is, my nature is undutiful, and I know there's... just being on the treadmill every day, there's at least... When I get to a place where I can download my mail, there's going to be at least 250 mails that I've got to answer, and at least 50 of them are urgent. And I'm just, hanging out here in Sharanagati chanting Hare Krishna. When people are depending upon me to perform, and I'm not performing. So that push of duty was gnawing. And that was Thursday night, and then Friday, so it's this background. So it took like a day of detox just to get, so I could focus on chanting. And when chanting, by the mercy of the Association of Devotees, that stuff stopped, and I was able to focus on chanting. And an amazing thing started happening. Like things that I'd been struggling with, all of a sudden, like, without even applying thought, the solution came. Just like resonated. Because I'm so busy being responsible. And dutiful, that there isn't the indication from Krishna, isn't sufficient indication from Krishna space to things that are very looming and big to give Krishna space to give a solution.
You should come to Sharanagati more often.
Yeah, I think it's the long Brahma Muhurta hour.
Wide open space without creates wide open space within.
So that was a faith item. It was important. It's not a matter of changing nature, but where do we apply our faith? Again, where attention goes, energy flows. Faith in the Holy Name, it's very fundamental. And to do like this, Prabhu was advising us to consider
how the rest of the things that we do in the course of the day besides our chanting is connected to the quality of our chanting. Yes, sir. Everything that we do is connected to the quality of our chanting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote something to the effect that, I'm not sure I have the numbers precise, but 90%, something like that, of our spiritual advancement depends upon the quality of our chanting. And that's, you know, the quality of our service depends upon the quality of our Krishna consciousness. So, how much faith do we have in that? Will determine how much, where our attention goes. And where attention, when attention goes to the holy name, because behind that there's some faith in the holy name, then there's feelings. Like I was feeling very protected. Whereas before I was feeling very challenged and, you know, incapable of handling the challenge. I was feeling very protected. You know, when Monday comes around and the 250 males come, let's see how I feel. But because people are expecting performance. And that's me, and then, you know, there's other people that have busy lives and busy jobs and people expecting things from them from many different angles. Would you like to add something to the topic of faith, Vishakha?
Well, maybe you could elaborate on Prabhupada's statement that Krishna consciousness is not faith in terms of today I stand as Hindu, tomorrow I stand as Muslim, next day I stand as Christian.
Well, his statement is it's not a belief, a type of belief or faith.
The lower use of the word faith.
Meaning, you know, like say, you do this ritual and you express your belief in a certain teaching, and that's what religion is. So that's what Prabhupada would speak against. Because rituals, you can go from this ritual to that ritual, or this set of acceptances of scriptural statements and to another set of statements of scriptural words, and that's not what religion is. That's how he would use it. Rather, religion is the essence of the living being, that which is unchanging in the living being, that which sustains the living being. And what is that? Service. So real religion is service at its maturest stage of love of God. Mm-hmm. It's another use of the term altogether. Mm-hmm. I just want to add something. This is a nice topic. Faith. Mm-hmm. Faith in the holy name. Yadavar, something?
I can just go back and read Bhagavad Gita, chapter Divisions of Faith. See how that comparisons. Where Krishna's giving those divisions of faith according to the three modes. And we're talking, I think about a different, you know, different level of faith.
Yeah.
That's a new faith. Faith in transcendence.
Yeah.
So you're responding to Vishakha's statement of how Prabhupada used religion as Krishna consciousness, not just a faith.
Yeah, I'd like to to a degree, but I'd also like just to refer to that chapter after this discussion of things.
Yes.
And also, Prabhupada, in so many of his teachings, he would want to rectify our misconceptions, just with that statement that faith is not this shallow or external belief, but faith is the internal identity or the intrinsic essence. So he reformed our misunderstanding, our shallow understanding, and brought us to a higher understanding of what real faith is, what the real meaning of faith is. You know, that it's intrinsic essence. Yeah.
Good. Good. Yeah.
One thought is that when Krishna reinforces, say, the faith of the demigod worshippers, he actually reinforces the thing. So in our preaching work, our business is somewhat to undermine faith in the worship of the demigods and other types of Buddhist spiritualists.
The modes of nature types of faith. Mm. The modes of faith reposed in the modes of nature, or under the influence of the modes of nature.
Mm. So it's Krishna on one hand is reinforcing the faith, and on the other hand, tearing it down.
Krishna fulfills all desires. Eh?
Well, are we doing something wrong?
Following the footsteps of Prabhupada.
And we're following in the footsteps of Krishna, because Krishna in Bhagavad Gita also says that faith is misplaced, because actually it's meant for me alone. So we're just, our undermining of that faith with Krishna instilled is by repeating Krishna's words. And if they're not prepared to hear Krishna's words, their faith will remain. They'll only think we're fanatics.
It actually gets back to desire. What people desire, Krishna is so kind that he fulfills in life after life. But at the same time, he wants everyone to come to a higher platform.
And he entrusts that to the Madhyama Adhikars. So if we don't do it, Krishna is not going to interfere. So it stays the same. But Krishna is indicating to us to repeat his message. And there's no one more dear to me than one who repeats this message. Which is, go for it. Undermine that faith. At the same time, he says, one should not disturb their faith. He says that.
Preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless. It's interesting.
Yes, it is. What I've understood about that offense is, we don't describe the intimacies as we were doing at this Japa retreat about the glories of the holy name. Rather, we give an introduction. Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Our mantra cards. Chant Hare Krishna and it'll dismiss your material sufferings. This mantra relieves one of the sufferings of material existence. But that's not details of the glories of the holy name. Yes.
In the purport of the verse you are referring to, where Krishna says, don't disturb their faith, Srila Prabhupada refers to this dilemma. So he says, the devotees of the Lord are more merciful than the Lord. So even though the Lord says, don't disturb them, the devotees go ahead and instill this message nonetheless.
He says right in the purport, right?
So that's reconciling.
But we're doing so under his orders, not. Otherwise he wouldn't do.
Yes.
But he personally doesn't interfere, but he engages us in it. Gives us something to do.
And he supplies intelligence, suitable people, potency, and everything.
Yeah. Anyone who has not spoken would like to? Yes?
Yeah, we're talking about Dave. It comes to my mind. Sometimes we're talking to some people about Bhagavad Gita, and just give some little explanation of what Bhagavad Gita says, you know, second chapter, our real identity is we're a spirit soul, we're different from the body. And it goes on to explain about, you know, reincarnation. We go from childhood to youth to old age, and after that, we enter into another body, like that. And some people are thinking, well, I'm not sure. Some people believe in that, and maybe somebody doesn't believe in that. It's just all just a belief, right? You have some kind of faith that it's true, but it's only a belief. And then when I'm usually responding in saying, but actually in our scriptures it doesn't talk like that. It talks about we're practicing yoga. Yoga is considered to be the supreme science, or the science of self-realization, or something like that. It's described in scientific terms. So where's the question of just a belief?
Prabhupada would address maybe it's similar, but so many times, everyone has seen it. There was once a baby body, and now that's gone. Then there's a young man's or girl's, boy's or girl's body, and now that's gone, and now it's a young adult's body, and now that's gone. And we have that experience. We all have the continuing sense of I exist, but that body is gone. But I still exist. It's not a belief, it's something we all have experience of. You would say, just try to understand. So it's not, it's with reason, not just faith in some doctrine. It's experimental. One can actually experience it.
My idea is that some people will suggest to us that it's nice what you do, but I think it's just a belief what you're doing. That it's your belief, and other people believe, you know, to be a Christian, and somebody believes to be a Jew. You know, everybody has their own belief. So you have your own belief, and throw us in the just throw us in the pot with everybody else, something like that.
Right. Prabhupada would differentiate in a manner that one of the ways he would do is the manner I just described. So you have your, for example, he would say, you have your authority, and I have my authority, so we disagree, and then we end our discussion because we have different authorities. So let's put aside our authority, our belief in the doctrine. Let's just use common sense. Common sense says, it's not the belief in the doctrine, it's common sense. Here's what we experience. Like that. We can all, anyone can understand. Regardless of your belief system, anyone can understand. Okay, I think it's time for more kirtan. The schedule is going to go something like till 5 o'clock. If I remember correctly, and at 5:15 we go to the prasadam line again.
Jeff walks on the way.
Yeah, a little Jeff walks on the way.